Teachers, let's start off this episode with an incredibly random fact. One of my favorite songs of all times is Vanilla Ice's Ice Ice Baby. I think it is an iconic jam that when you hear it, you can't get it out of your head. And I remember in one of my very first years of teaching, my students were struggling with some scientific concepts. And as a classroom teacher, I understand, and I'm sure that you understand, that there are lots of great strategies to get kids to remember important things, and one of those is music. And because I love music and find writing lyrics really fun, I decided to take one of my favorite songs, which is Ice Ice Baby, and remix it into a science anthem called Science, Science Baby. And I took it and I wrapped it and I recorded it and I made like a music video and a lyric video. And by the end of that science unit, my students were doing a whole lot better with that content because they couldn't get the song out of their head. Now let's take that random fact to a whole nother level. I ended up wrapping part of my remix, which is Science, Science, Baby. I wrapped part of that live on television with Wayne Brady when I was a contestant on Let's Make a Deal. Dead serious. They dropped a beat. Wayne Brady looked at me and said, "Can you rap?" And I'm like, "Not really, but let me give it a shot." And basically, I rapped Leeuwenhoek saw, yo, the first cell bacteria on slides. He could tell, pea plant study by Gregor Mendel. Punnett squares, read about it on a Kindle. And that was a fun moment. There's a whole lot more to that story. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I understand that hands-on activities that engage 100% of our students are really hard to create. They're hard to come up with as well. And I think whether you are a middle school or high school science teacher, or maybe you're an elementary teacher who teaches some science during your day, the point and the purpose of this episode is to decrease the amount of planning that you have to do. I want to take something off of your plate because over the course of my 16 plus years as a classroom teacher, I have taken all of the science materials that I've used, all of the science materials that I've made, including reference sheets and labs and lessons and questions. And I've basically said, yo, you're a science teacher and you want to use these? I've done it all for you. And they're really, really impactful and kids really love them. And so I want to describe some of those things to you in this episode because I want to make sure that your kids are 100% engaged and live in that science, science, baby lifestyle. So if you teach even 20 minutes of science per week, then you are going to love this episode. Let's get into it. There is awesome in every single school day. So here is the big question. How can teachers like us who love our job, love our students, and love being a part of education celebrate awesome even more in our classrooms and learning communities? Where can we find teaching tips and tricks? Where can we find engaging stories and motivational strategies? That is the question, and this weekly podcast is your answer. So welcome to all my teacher friends. My name is Monica Genta, and I am so excited that you are here listening to this podcast, This Teacher Life. Whether your students are 6 or 16, the question, the W question that I am about to ask, that I think that you should ask your students, is guaranteed to get them heated up, passionate, and have lots of opinions. And the question is, what cereal is your favorite? I know my answer. It's Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Cinnamon Toast Crunch is an unbeatable cereal. The unfortunate thing about Cinnamon Toast Crunch is that you have to eat it at a very rapid rate because it gets soggy very quickly. And unlike some cereals that get better with a little bit of sog, Cinnamon Toast Crunch gets nasty real quick. So if you're going to have a little Cinnamon Toast Crunch, okay, a little CTC, you have to eat that quickly. I'm curious what your students would say. Are they Captain Crunch fans? Are they Cocoa Pebbles, Cocoa Puffs, the variety of Cheerios? Because there are 76 different varieties of Cheerios these days. What is your student's favorite cereal? That's a W question. And the next question would be, when was the last time that your students used problem solving, data analysis, and real life skills in your classroom to actually figure out in a scientific, hands-on way what cereal is best when it's soggy or what cereal stays crunchiest the longest? What I am proposing here is a cerealously good idea. It's a soggy cereal lab. And this is obviously very, very great for science, but this is really good for STEAM or STEM or just a way to get kids looking at numbers so you could use it in math or writing qualitative and quantitative statements as a writing activity in ELA. But one of the things that I have realized is that we can structure activities a whole lot better when we have the foundation of what's the W question. So what cereal gets the soggiest the fastest? And can we show kids how to study the boxes to find important information? Can we come up with a prediction or a hypothesis? Can we create a step-by-step experiment or plan to investigate these cereals? Can we take important notes and create graphs and have data tables? Can we make a conclusion statement? And when we've done all that, can we find patterns? Can we connect this to our real life? Can we talk about how cereals are similar or different? If your experiment went well, what would you do to make it even better in the future? If it didn't go well, how could you change it to see improvements? That structure that I just rattled off just kind of naturally happens because that is a structure that I have used over the course of my past 15 years when I am doing science in the classroom for sure, but also advisory and SEL problem solving, also when I taught math. And so what I'm describing to you is an actual soggy cereal lab where I have students look at the different shapes or textures of different cereals and have them create a really fun comparison by organizing a hands-on engaging activity with cereal and spoons and bowls and paper towels and a food scale and a timer. And it's all ironed out for me. So I don't even have to think about how am I going to engage kids this week? How am I going to use the next generation science standards? How am I going to use the social and emotional learning standards? How am I going to use the math standards? These types of labs absolutely crush every time. And the good news is there's a lot of types of labs. If you're like, okay, that's great for cereal, but what other ideas you got? Same thing with paper towels. When was the last time that there was a spill by one of them fancy, you know, tumblers in your classroom, one of them Stanleys, or what do we have these days? Owala, is that one? Is anyone still carrying a Tervis? Is that still a thing? What about those really, really big ones? They weighed like a million pounds. I forget what they're called. All of these water bottles these days, they fall on the ground and it sounds like a massive explosion. But when those things spill, liquid goes everywhere. How can we turn that into a real life problem solving activity? A paper towel lab. Let's get some school paper towels. Let's get some Bounty. Let's get some quilted quicker picker uppers. Let's get some Brawny. Let's get some Dollar Tree paper towels. Let's get some paper towels from the Dollar General. If you happen to live in the Midwest and you have a Dollar General every 5 miles, can we take something like a spill and scientifically analyze what paper towel absorbs the most water? And then we can turn this into a math activity because it's like, well, how much does that paper towel cost? Is it good for the environment? but is it also good for our budget? Can we plan a step-by-step analysis, a step-by-step lab? Can we draw a conclusion? Can we create a lab that's similar to a large spill in real life? You guys, it's super fun. And you can do this same structure and setup if maybe you've got a magnet unit in your science class, or maybe it's the study of the senses. So how smell and taste are coordinated. Could you do a mystery drink lab where kids can't see the fluids that they are drinking? Can a student actually distinguish something like water from Kool-Aid? Or better yet, if you have six different types of Kool-Aids, but they cannot see the color, and you don't tell them that there's one grape Kool-Aid, one strawberry Kool-Aid, one blue raspberry Kool-Aid, if they can't see the color, can they actually determine the flavor? If they're like blindfolded per se? What about gum? Is gum a problem on your campus? Because what if you took gum and turned that into an actual lab where we could problem solve gum? What type of gum holds its flavor the longest? Is it one of the mints? Is it spearmint, peppermint, or cinnamon? Or what if we looked at bubblegum flavors from three different companies? Does Bazooka gum hold its flavor longer than like Hubba Bubba or the Big League Chew? As a teacher, I'm going to highly, highly recommend that you do not select Big League Chew as one of the gums for a gum lab. But I just felt like as a 90s kid, I had to bring up Big League Chew. My parents would absolutely never get that for us. And I understand why, but at the time I was so mad. But what about like a stick of gum versus a gumball versus a square of gum? Can we analyze the flavor to figure out which one of those shapes, the shape, impacts the flavor of the gum? You guys, so many great opportunities. But you could, again, structure labs like this if you were studying light bulbs and electricity, and you have kids make their own circuits. You could have kids make their own light bulb. You could have kids make their own rocket by bringing in basic things like film canisters and a little Alka-Seltzer and some water and some tape and some balloons. And kids have a rock and rocket lab. I guarantee you that one's going to be out of this world. Okay. All right. My whole point here is that science is a lot to manage. Hands-on activities are a lot to manage. Hands-on math activities are a lot to handle. But when we can create the variety, and we already have bomb ideas that are completely planned that also come with discussion questions and graphs that are already set up and pie charts that are already set up and data tables that are already set up, that is a game changer for us. And can I just tell you, everything that I've already described in this episode, I have a bundle of things for you. You can actually check it out. You can go to monicagenta.com/science shop, and all of the labs that I have just described are already there. And what's really, really cool about it is like there's some extras, because as a teacher, I'm a little extra. And I've done a whole podcast episode about this, but oftentimes when I am creating these labs and implementing these labs, I create like a little science store shopping list, and I get a bunch of resources out, and students have to choose what resources that they are going to actually use to build their rocket, or what resources they're going to use to build their car. And then they have to justify why they are doing that. And one of the things in my science lab bundle is a shopping list for your science store, including a ridiculous scanner system that I use. And I'll link that episode because the whole scanner system is really, really silly. But my point is I don't want you to have to recreate these things. If you need science lab models or illustrations or science vocabulary that kids should know, like what is a science question? What is a science experiment? Variable, what's an observation? What does graph mean? What's an accurate conclusion? How do we write good W questions that are who, what, where, when, why, or how? How do we actually control variables? what does that mean between independent and dependent variables? Do we know how to write a step-by-step scientific investigation or experiment where if we took the step-by-step directions that you created for your science lab and gave those to somebody else, that they would be able to accurately replicate the experiment that you carried out? Do we know that there are different types of observations? It's what you see, hear, taste, feel, and smell. Can kids actually observe in all of the ways using all of their senses? Do students understand how to make a bar graph versus a pie chart versus a line graph? Like, these are things that are essential starting in elementary school, but absolutely still are important at the middle school and high school level. So I have this massive like 52-page science bundle that even has like pacing guides and helpful setups for labs, and all of the handouts, all of the questions, all of the lab guides are already done for you. And so I just wanted to illustrate that, like, yes, hands-on activities are crazy, but if we are just taking real life problems that kids already have, like, why did you use 42 paper towels on that spill? Or like, why are you eating your cereal so fast? It's like, because I did a science experiment at school and I realized that Captain Crunch gets soggy after 4 minutes and 32 seconds. So I have exactly 4 minutes and 31 seconds to eat it before the sog factor increases. Like, how cool is that? How cool is it when kids are creating a hands-on Newton scooter? You know, Newton is known for his three laws of motions. And is there a lab that combines all three of those laws that we can see in real life? The answer is heck yes. Have them build their own cars. Have them think about F equals MA, force equals mass times acceleration. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. An object at rest stays at rest. An object in motion will stay in motion until acted upon by a force, which is, you know, inertia. All of those things that sound dry, like, oh my God, did you take a snoozer as I just recited Newton's three laws of motion? So if you took a little snoozer on that, it's because you're like, ugh, why are we having kids just memorize things like Newton's laws of motions? Do I think that it's important for kids to understand those? Yes, but they're going to understand them most when we are just doing some basic hands-on things. And here's what I will say. These labs, these lessons don't require many materials. My philosophy sometimes when teaching hands-on activities is if I can't get it at the dollar store, like if I can't get it at the $1.25 tree, then I'm doing too much, okay? I'm spending too much. I'm trying too hard because there are so many things that can create science, math, ELA, hands-on activities using straws and paper plates and styrofoam and shit from your house, literally. Just random shit from your house. A box of crayons. A deck of cards with that don't even have the full deck. Just finding those things from your house and putting them in your science store and seeing what kids can create. What can they imagine? What can they construct to connect the real world and real world problems to science? Or to social and emotional learning? Or two, time management. Because another thing is a time management issue on science. I often hear people say, like, I can't do these huge labs and lessons. They take forever. Well, I think I have a pacing guide, actually, in the science bundle. But I think you can do a 45-minute time block. But I also think that sometimes you can chunk your class periods differently and maybe do something over the course of 2 days or 3 days. But I think labs and lessons that are hands-on definitely can have some flexibility, no doubt about it. And so if you're looking for just resources to help engage your student, specifically, I think it works really well in science, but I would argue that these work in other areas as well. Like I said earlier, you can go to monicajensa.com/science shop. I'm going to put that link in the show notes as well, but I want you to know that it's not just labs, okay? On that link, you're also going to find one of my favorite resources of all times called 180 Days of Awesome Science. And it is literally bell ringers or test prep for the entire year. 180 different questions that are aligned to the science standards. Another thing that I have is this really cool game called BOSS. It stands for Brainstorming on Scientific Scenarios, and it is a really fun, outside of the box, engaging way to get kids brainstorming on real life situations. As well as I have a science curriculum guide that's really, really fun because it has tons of projects, it has battle brackets, it has discussion questions, it has unit plans. It's really, really great. So what I'm trying to say is, if you are tired, because I know this is a time of the year where we're hitting walls. If you are tired and you're like, girl, I can't have another quarter like I just had. Girl, I can't have another semester like the one I just had. And you just need some help getting the resources. You're definitely going to want to check out monicajensa.com/science shop. Again, there's a direct link for that in the show notes. But teacher friend, save yourself some time. Snatch those up. And then you can do what you do best. You can do what you actually went in this profession to do, which is engage with kids. Have fun with them. Watch them learn and grow by using these resources that I'm telling you, they work because I've used them with my own students over the course of my career. And a lot of them I continue to use even now. Like, I don't have a dedicated science class on my caseload this year. Like, if you were to pull up the class periods that I teach and the age groups that I teach, nowhere does it say science. But so many of the resources that I'm describing to you, especially these labs, especially the game of BOSS, especially some of these brackets that I'm referring to, I use because they are great in so many different subject areas. So if you're like, girl, science, science, baby, Jenta, Jenta. Did you see what I did there? Like, ice, ice, baby. I don't know what they say when he's like, ice, ice, baby. They say something there. I'm not sure what it is. But in mine, I say, science, science, baby, Jenta, Jenta. That's right. If you want to check out Science, Science, Baby, I'm sure it's somewhere on the YouTubes. It's cringy. I can't listen to the song anymore. I can't watch the music video anymore because it's absolutely cringy because I've made that video almost 20 years ago at this point. Sometimes my students find that on the internet and they remind me that it's out there and I'm like, thank you. We are definitely not using class time to engage with that. But if you teach the scientists and some of their major accomplishments, then maybe you do want to check out Science, Science, Baby. Harvard studied crops and where they should lay, famous for the peanut, PBJ. That's just another part of the science rap. Guys, I understand that my methodology is quirky sometimes. I get that. But the cool thing about it is if you're quirky, awesome. If you're quiet, awesome. If you are like rainbows and butterflies shooting out of your classroom every single day because of your positivity and happiness, I love that. I love all teaching personas. I love all teaching styles. But I think regardless of your teaching persona and the skills and strength that you're bringing to the table, I do think it is our educational and social responsibility to engage kids. And I really do think that some of the things that I brought up in this episode are going to help you do that. So, teacher friend, do yourself a favor. Save some time, save some energy, save some frustration, save some sanity, and go check out these resources because I am telling you, you're going to have a ton of fun with them and you will not regret it. So, I hope that you have enjoyed this episode. I want to thank you for listening. But most importantly, I just want to thank you for living this teacher life.